We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 247. A very happy 4th of July to everybody out there. The 4th of July also means Big Stein's birthday, America's birthday, and most importantly, the legendary John Sterling's birthday. What's up, Scott?
John Sterling had some daps by the Yankees. They gave him a nice little watch. They gave Michael Kay gave him a birthday shout out by doing the Giancarlo Nosin Parlo blah 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 call, and they had a nice. If you go to the Yankees website, they have a mashup of the two of them doing it together. And if anybody is old enough to remember, they used to call the games together on 770.
Were great. I thought they were really, really good together when they were in the radio together.
Absolutely. I think that's what I grew up with. I grew up with listening to them at night when I was going to sleep on my clock radio. It feels very old. That feels very old-fashioned to say.
Michael Kay said that he planned on doing a home run call that John Sterling did. It just mattered who hit the home run. How pissed do you think he was that it was Stanton and not somebody easy to remember like Judge or something like that?
I think it's great. I loved it because there's a video of him doing it, and O'Neill is just like all over him, like literally like getting his shoulders while he's in the middle of doing it. He couldn't hold back the laughter. So he was prepared. I give him credit for that he was prepared, and he delivered the line. So it was pretty funny.
I think people need to realize with John Sterling that the guy just turned 80 years old, and he does not miss games. He's done like 30 straight years of calling baseball games. It's very impressive.
It is very impressive. And when you actually see what he looks like when he does these calls, it's pretty hysterical. Because they had a bunch of cameras on him today. And he just gets so animated and starts shaking. You know, there's a couple of GIFs of him like doing it. You can see it. If you look up just John Sterling images, and you can see him doing the calls. But he literally like moves his whole body, his whole head shakes while he's doing the calls. He kind of looks like a bobblehead as he's doing it. He gets into it. I mean, the man loves what he's doing. It's very obvious. And you can't do something that long and not love what you do for not missing a day. I mean, he's the iron horse of broadcasting.
He's a lot of energy in those 80-year-old bones.
That's right. You can't see a damn thing, but he will deliver a home run call.
How was your 4th of July otherwise?
It was good, man. It was finally a nice day to relax. I think a lot of us drank some beers, ate some barbecue. I had a nice little pool party at a buddy's house. And we watched the game on just kind of casually and on the iPad, and drank some beers and played in the pool. So it was a lot of fun. It was a nice day to relax.
I've been at the beach all week. I'm on vacation this week, so I'm kind of losing track of days. But I bought a 24-pack of Corona at the liquor store, not realizing that I didn't buy the 12-ounce ones. I bought the 7-ounce ones. Have you ever seen those?
Oh, yeah. It happens. It's happened to me before.
And I was filling up the fridge and just reaching into the box, putting them in. And I was like, something's different here. Something is different than I looked down at. You've got to be kidding me. Only 7-ounce ones. And now I have to drink twice as many bottles.
Yeah, you look like a complete degenerate when you take the recycling out.
So right.
That's something I'm very wary of on Tuesday mornings when I have to take my recycling out. I make sure I dump my recycling bin while closer to the garage so that people can't hear it.
Hear the cling cling.
Yeah, it kind of sells me out when I dump my recycling into the big bin. Lots of bottles hitting.
I think I may have stumbled upon something, a hidden gem here, though. I think the Corona tastes better out of the 7-ounce bottles because it doesn't get watered down, doesn't get kind of gross towards the end because you're done in like 3-4 sips anyway.
I don't know. I think you're just trying to sell yourself on it. It's really hard. Like, it's really hard to drink because you have to like hold it with finger. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. You feel like a giant. I've got like 19 more to drink. So yeah, I am selling myself.
So now you know how now you know how Aaron Judge feels when he drinks a regular Corona.
Right. Or like, you know, the famous picture of Andre the Giant holding the beer can and it looks miniature. And that's
a day in the life on the beach with Aaron Judge drinking a Corona.
Yes. Today on the second half of this episode, we teased it last time. We have the audio of the Pitch CC celebrity softball game event. We talked to a bunch of guys, including Sabathia, Didi, Sonny Gray, Carlos Beltran, and more. So we also recap the event with Dom. So that's on the second part of this episode. Stay tuned for that. And also, Scott, we want to remind people how to buy tickets for July 22nd.
So July 22nd is the Sunday night Bronx Pinstripes crew event. We're Subway Series playing the Mets Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN. Going to be a fun game. Again, Section 205. The tickets have been flying out of the fan shop. That's where you get them. Go to bronxpinstripes.com and just follow the link for the fan shop up top, and you can get there, and it's super easy. $87. Again, we're going to be doing the pregame at the Bronx Brewery. You get a t-shirt, a beer that comes with the ticket, and then also the game ticket. So these this is another one of those premium games where the ticket on the secondary market will be much more than this ticket, and in this case, you're also getting a beer with it. So this is a deal of a century. Make sure you get it. They will sell out. I promise you that. We have right around 300 tickets in that section. So go in and get them and get your crew together. And also, we're extending the same deal that we've done for the majority of them. If you have and you are the captain of a group that is 10 or more, you will get your ticket for free. So just shoot us an email and I'll send you a code for that. Or if you've already purchased, let me know. Shoot me an email and I'll just reimburse that one ticket. And pretty good deal. Get your friends to go and you get to go for free.
So we Yankees took 2 out of 3 from Atlanta. Started off rough on Monday. We actually had a really cool stat posted in the Facebook group by Glenn Johnson. He's always posting things in there. If you guys want to join that Facebook group, it's the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. Like we say, there's a lot of in-game chatter, funny pictures, memes, all that kind of stuff going on in there. But what he posted was that the Yankees are 20-8 against current playoff teams. That includes the Astros, the Braves, the Phillies, the Mariners, the Indians, and the Red Sox. And they've won all of those series except one. That was the one early on at Fenway against Boston. So I think what the Yankees have been able to do, and we've said this kind of just each episode as they've gone, as they got into that gauntlet of the schedule and the team started to play better. But this team definitely, and here is the proof, plays the best against good competition.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, I think. You know, we've...
Well, yeah.
We've talked about the, you know, I don't like it when they play down to their competition, but it's such a natural thing to do, I think. You kind of let your guard down when you're not playing a team that's as good and, you know, for whatever reason, your focus isn't all the way there or you take things for granted, I think. But the fact that they can, you know, get into those moments and play so well against these good teams is truly telling, I think, to the way that this team can be and where their talent can take them. And then obviously, you know, when the end of the season comes and they have to buckle down, especially that last series that's going to be in Boston, which most likely will have implications, you know, that's important to know that this team can get up for the big game. So I love it. I love that stat. It's a great stat.
Well, about playing down to the competition, I think that was more of an early April thing narrative. The only time you can maybe argue is the Tampa series last weekend or two weekends ago where they got swept. But so many nutty things happened in that series that I almost give them you chalk that up to just that's baseball, Susan.
Yeah. It was like a voodoo series. It doesn't count. I mean, literally weren't, that was not a real ballpark.
But if they do fall into that trap of playing down to the competition, it's going to be a problem because they're going to need to beat up on all the crummy teams like Tampa, like Baltimore, like Toronto in their division, because they're going to need to win a hell of a lot of ball games if they want to beat Boston in the division. They're going to have to win over 100 ball games to do that. You do not want to have to play that one game wild card. And we saw it last year. You do not want to have to go on the road in the ALCS.
So as you go into the season further and the season's starting to dwindle down and everybody starts paying attention to the standings more and you know, what games each team has left and you know, what they're doing in this particular week, it's almost like you're playing against the schedule at that point, right? You're playing every game almost against the Red Sox. And I feel like that's the mentality that they can get, because even if you're playing a team that's not very good, I mean, yes, you're playing that team there in front of you, but you have to beat them to stay up with the Red Sox, you know? So you're still playing against the Red Sox, whether they're on the field or not. So I think that is, you know, it's one of those narratives that they can kind of drum up in their own head, saying that, okay, this is what we have to do. We have to win every single game. Every single game is important and is a playoff game, because it's going to come down to a handful of games at the end of the season. And whoever gets the home field advantage and whoever wins the AL East is going to have a significant advantage into the playoffs. And they don't want to be in that same position they were last year, where they had to play in that one game wild card, not line up their pitching. And then eventually, you know, they did beat Cleveland, they did beat Minnesota, but you know, they had to play games on the road And ultimately, I mean, I think that's why they lost against Houston, is because they didn't. If they had home field advantage in that Houston series, I think the Yankees win that series. So it's important.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. You heard some of the quotes after the Astros finally got out of Yankee Stadium after Game 5. They were demoralized. He said, yeah, it was so loud in here. It was a real, real home field advantage. And we said that all last October. You could tell this team was never out of it when they were at home.
And you're hearing that now. I mean, I've listened to some games with on the other side of the booth with some of the opponent broadcasters, just cause, so I can hear some other stuff. And yeah, I've heard some of these guys talking about how, you know, when they're coming into Yankee Stadium now in, you know, May, June, July, that it's loud and it's different than it has been in prior years. So I think it's not even just October. It's not just the playoffs. I mean, Yankee Stadium is fully back at this point, and people know it.
All right, let's play the game. We're here, sitting here on July 4th. It's the last weekend at Fenway Park, and the Yankees and Red Sox are tied. Do you throw Severino to win the division, or do you save him for the one-game wild card against maybe the Mariners?
So you're saying one game left to
do it?
Yeah,
one game left. Sunday yeah. afternoon, you are tied in the standings. Do you throw Severino?
Yeah, I do.
Because
I think that essentially is a one game wild card, right? I mean, it is a play-in game. It's to win. It's that next game is to win the AL East and to get a bye, and that's essentially winning the wild card. I mean, that's a playoff game.
Yeah, and maybe if it means if you win the AL East, you also win home field advantage, which could very well be. I definitely agree with you. But yeah, say the Astros have some unbelievable second half and pull away and end up having the best record in baseball, and the Yankees and Red Sox are not in that position, and it means you're on the road in the ALCS anyway, maybe you save Severino. I don't know. It's going to be something fun, I think, that last weekend to pay attention to, because the Red Sox are going to be in the same position with Chris Sale.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, they're not trying to walk into anything leading off a playoff series with David Price. It's just not a good, or Porcello. I guess you could go Porcello too. But yeah, they are in a very similar position. I don't know. A lot of things can happen from now until then. Obviously, who knows who the Yankees are getting? So there may be another option. Tanaka may have another great, you know, very good second half. Who the hell knows with Sonny Gray? I'm not even going to say anything about him.
Yeah.
but you know. You just don't know. But yeah, I think in a situation like that, I'm winning that game.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Let's talk about Monday. Frustrating loss. Extra inning game. Yankees had a million chances. They left 12 men on base. They were 0 for 12 with runners in scoring position. Wasted opportunities with leadoff doubles, bases loaded. There was an opportunity in the 7th inning. And then again with Neil Walker pinch hitting in the 8th inning. And then there was bases loaded where they absolutely did nothing. So since June 1st, the Yankees actually rank last in Major League Baseball in team batting average with runners in scoring position, which is atrocious. But then on the flip side, a lot of people are blaming Aaron Boone for this loss because of the way he handled the bullpen.
Yeah, it's just one of those very frustrating games when you go 0-for-12 with runners in scoring position and you're wasting all of those opportunities. And then you end up losing a game that was very, very winnable at that. You know, you had enough pitching in the game to win the game, and all you got to do is capitalize on some opportunities.
You go 1-for-12, you win the game.
Right. It's frustrating. There's a whole bunch of things that I think that can be looked at. That Aaron, this was the first time in a long time, and of course it's right after the show that we had praising Aaron Boone.
I was thinking that too.
I'm sitting here like, this is great. That Aaron Boone's been called into question. It's been a long time since that's actually happened, I think, and this was definitely one of those that warranted it, though.
Well, it flew under the radar on Sunday night when the Yankees were bashing David Price's brains in, is that Robertson, Betances, and Chapman all pitched because they hadn't pitched in a number of days. And I guess it didn't dawn on me that maybe using all three of them in the same game just to, quote, get work was a little stupid. You want to use Betances, fine. You want to use Chapman, fine. Maybe don't burn both of them for just a work situation, because you knew you had Loaisiga on Monday and then Herman on Tuesday. You were going to have to lean on your bullpen in those two games.
Yeah, I mean, definitely looking back and seeing that, and it honestly, when I was watching it as well, it's not something that triggered in my head. But, you know, I just don't understand in a situation like that when you do have three guys that need work, why you can't lay one back and just do some side work just so that there's a little bit of a replication.
The guys always say it's not the same, though.
I understand it's not the same. I get that it's not the same, but it can delay a day. You know, it could push it back a day to get a little bit of work and get the arm loose, and then, you know, have that guy the next day on Monday, at least one of them has to get in at that point if you're going to use two of them on Sunday. But yeah, you go all three, and then you're really putting yourself in a position now where, you know, maybe they're good for the second day, or maybe they're good for Tuesday. But one of those days, you're going to be missing guys. And if you need them, we saw what could happen on Tuesday, where you have to go with, you know, an extended Adam Warren who has absolutely nothing. And he's the only option at that point, because your other option is Chasen Clippard. And, you know, there's just, you're looking at all around bad options. So, and it was a situation that absolutely Boone put himself in.
And you could tell on Tuesday, Boone sends Adam Warren back out there, and I think Boone behind his back is crossing his fingers saying, let's give up a laser right at somebody. Don't give it up in the gap, because that's how bad Adam Warren was throwing.
Well, yeah, because his first inning, I mean, it was line drive, line drive, line drive. I mean, they were squaring him up. He was getting very lucky that he got out of that inning, and so they were hitting him hard. He was not fooling a damn person. And, you know, there were a couple balls to the warning track, if I remember correctly. So the fact that he came out for the second inning, I'm like, come on, is this real life? I mean, we're not watching the same game here. Like, this guy's got nothing.
When the alternative is Shreve,
yeah,
it's pick your poison. That is a Sophie's choice right there for Aaron Boone.
Well, I don't know about that, because, you know, the way that Adam Warren was going, you could almost put some money on the fact that he's going to get hit around a little bit, and then you're bringing in Chasen Shreve with guys on base. So,
right.
So what's worse? I don't know. And you know, to Shreve's credit, he came into that game and he locked it down, and he got the ball to Chapman in the ninth inning, and they were able to win the game. And that was a big moment, because they very well could have lost that game. Chasen Shreve came in, didn't look great, honestly, but he did enough and got out of that spot and picked up Warren. But that was a game that they went up, what, 6-0, and they
it was a slow burn.
It was a painful ending of the game, and it was like a 4-hour game too, and they very easily could have lost that game after they jumped out for that offensive little six spot. But the bullpen had nothing, and Herman couldn't go deep again. So
they also could have been up 9-0, because you get 5 walks in one inning. 5 walks, and you can't just get one big hit to blow that thing open. It's very frustrating. What do you think it is with this team with runners in scoring position? Are they trying to hit home runs? Are they just all slumping in those situations at the same time? Because April and May, they were, I think, top 3 in baseball in batting average with runners in scoring position. So what changed between May 31st and June 1st?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think there's it's impossible to really pinpoint it. I think that the makeup of the team is a little bit different now as well, but one would say that it's probably better. These guys are obviously not doing it as a team. And this
what
is
do you
one
mean
of those
by,
things.
Well, hold on. What do you mean by makeup?
I mean, like the first base situation is different than it is now. Yeah. Gleyber Torres is up. Like there are
all positive things you would think.
I agreed for sure. You know, there's just a bunch of different guys that, you know, maybe some of these younger guys are pressing too much and they're trying to do too much in those situations. Because, you know, if we're looking at Gleyber Torres's career and I'm looking 5 years back, assuming he's fully healthy, I'm looking at this guy and I bet he's going to have good numbers. He's going to have a good batting average. I think he's going to hit well with runners in scoring position. I think his home run totals are probably going to go down, and we're going to see more gaps. He's going to have more doubles. So this is a guy that's going to be hitting a lot more line drives, I think, and making more contact. So for this particular team, I don't think it's going to be a long-term problem. It does feel like it's one of those contagious hitting things, because that does tend to happen in baseball. Either a team gets hot or a team will just completely fall cold. And it seems like that's kind of what's going on with runners in scoring position. Like they're pressing too much. I don't know if that's it. Who knows what the hell it is, but that's what it looks like.
Well, Gleyber Torres is not the problem with runners in scoring position, because he's batting .339 in those situations.
Well, there you go. So that's,
and we know about all the 3-run bombs too.
Absolutely, he that's what he does. He hits 3-run home runs. But you add a guy like Gleyber Torres to the lineup, you'd think that they'd be better, because that's the kind of guy that really can balance out the lineup from all these home run hitters. And I'm not even calling, like, Aaron Judge is still one of those guys that should be. No issue hitting with runners in scoring position. He strikes out a lot, no doubt about it, but he also puts the bat on the ball a lot.
I also look at Boone there, and in the eighth inning, he pinch hits for Higashikoa with Neil Walker. Why not Brandon Drury there? And then he lets Greg Bird hit in the 10th inning against a lefty with still Drury on the bench. So it's just a couple of weird moves in key situations where he saw his team, something needed to be done. Some button needed to be pressed, and he didn't press the right button. And I know it's very easy for me to sit here 2 days later and criticize Boone for those decisions, but that is the game you play when you're a manager in baseball. It's second guessing. That's all people can do.
Here's the beauty about this whole thing. We have not been talking about Aaron Boone a lot. And the reason why we haven't been talking about Aaron Boone a lot is because he hasn't been pissing anybody off. He hasn't really been making very many bonehead moves, it seems like. A lot of the things that he has been doing that nobody really talks about, because when you do well and things happen, it's not really a story at that point. It's just you're playing baseball and they're winning. But when things are going wrong, not that they're even going wrong, we won the damn series, but when things are going wrong in small situations, you look at why those are going, and then you know you start going back to leadership. But at the end of the day, these guys got to execute when they're up, and when they don't execute, it's on that guy. Like in that situation, you're saying that, okay, Drury or Walker. I mean, you know, it's a toss up at that point. It's not that big of a thing.
I mean, Neil Walker's been so bad for so long, and now he's going to get an opportunity with Gleyber Torres on the DL.
Right.
But Neil Walker has been so bad for so long that you knew it was going to happen. He was going to strike out, and that's what happened.
I mean, you could say that about Drury, too, because Drury's been striking out a lot since he's been up in the major leagues, and he hasn't really hit well since he's been up here either. And, you know, the flexibility, who knows why he was actually doing that. But again, like, we're nitpicking on some of these situations, whereas this team is still playing well, even though they can't score with runners in scoring position. And Greg Bird did today have a beautiful single with a runner on second that scored a run.
Should we throw a parade for him? There was already parades for the 4th of July. We can't have a parade for Greg Bird getting a hit with runners in scoring position.
No, that's what the parade is today. Today's the 4th of July. I thought it was for the Greg Bird single.
So I think
into the shift, no less.
I think if Boone is looking back on Monday night and taking notes in his version of a binder on things to remember for next time, it's nothing to do with bunting or pinch hitting or runners in scoring position. It has everything to do with the bullpen and what he did on Sunday night. I think that is his takeaway.
Well, and I think that's a total experience thing, right? I mean, that's something that probably 100%. Larry Rothschild should have spoken up and said, hey, let's rethink this.
Maybe. Or it's something that Boone won't make the same mistake twice. We've seen him evolve.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, this is not something he'll ever do again. I guarantee that. But, you know, I think in a situation like this, Rothschild should be also aware of these guys and their work and you know, maybe second guess the move to get, you know, get all of these guys some extra work. So I'd put a little bit of that on Rothschild not stepping up.
And Loaisiga was sent down to AAA after the game. He, again, could not get deep into the game. What I saw out of him on Monday was the Braves not swinging at his off-speed stuff.
Yeah, and the big thing, I think, for what the way that the roster is setting up right now, I think we're going to see Johnny Lasagna coming back up. There's no doubt he's probably going to come back up for that doubleheader coming up with Baltimore. But I think because AJ Cole is healthy, and he pitched again on, what was that, Monday or Tuesday night? Tuesday night, I think.
Tuesday, looked good on Tuesday.
And looked good again. So literally every single time AJ Cole has come out and pitched in a Yankee uniform, the guy's done his job. So nobody should have a damn bad thing to say about AJ Cole, because he's done his job. And what that does, having him now... up on the roster does give some flexibility with the bullpen, because he is more of a longer guy. He's he started the season as a starter with Washington, so he could give a little bit of length in that bullpen. And you know, with Tanaka throwing, seems like Tanaka's coming back very soon, and that's, it'll line up the rotation for him to get back.
I think what they need to do with Cole is just use him more. He sat on the bench for 20 something days. Use him more, because he's proven to a point now where, hey, maybe they have something in Cole. Move on from Chase and Shreve. Let's see what AJ Cole has.
Yeah, I start going with Warren in shorter situations, and let's dub AJ Cole as that long guy who can get length and do some good things out there, because he's also proven that he can come in a one inning spot and be effective. So I'm you know, quietly excited about AJ Cole, I guess, because he's definitely he's one of those guys that makes the bullpen longer, and that's going to be big. I think that's going to be, he could actually play a very crucial role down the stretch, because if we have, depending on what happens with this trade with the trade market and whoever they get as a starting pitcher, the bullpen is going to be taxed most likely as you get down into the dog days, especially if you have some of these younger guys up there with innings limits or whatnot. You know, we have the strength in the back of the bullpen, but we're going to need guys to go out there and get innings. And a guy like AJ Cole could play a significant role.
Hey, the innings limit might not be a problem because Lasagna couldn't get through the fourth inning and then Herman couldn't get through the fifth inning. So they're just implementing their self-imposed innings limits just on their own. Smart. Herman spotted a six-run lead and then gives up back-to-back dingers in the fifth inning. Could not get out of that fifth inning. Extremely, extremely frustrating. You could tell Boone was sitting there watching like, come on, really? After a six-run lead, after a bullpen is totally toast from the night before, Herman, you can't just give me a couple more outs? It was that kind of look that Boone gave him.
Yeah, he had to do his full walk out to the dugout for the first time in a Yankee full uniform. And it was a little strange seeing Boone in a full Yankee uniform again because it was the first time he's actually worn it all season. Rather than not wearing the sleeves or a jacket, he actually had the top on, which was strange. So that walk to go and get him was a little different. But yeah, you could tell that he was frustrated by Herman. It seems like Herman does that quite often when he gets off and he starts, you know, struggling a little bit. Not dissimilar to what Sonny Gray does. It almost like it gets in his head and he just starts throwing meatballs.
It loses. It's the shift from good Herman to bad Herman is instant and drastic.
It is
kind of scary.
It is. It's a cliff because he did fall off a cliff. They were barreling him up after that home run and it didn't look like there was an end.
Right. Let's talk about Aaron Hicks, probably the third best center fielder in Major League Baseball this season, which a month and a half ago, people were hashtag DFAing Aaron Hicks on Twitter.
I don't know, man. Trout's had a pretty bad last 14 games, I think, batting under, been struggling. You could say Aaron Hicks over the last however long that stretch of Mike Trout's struggles are is the best center fielder in Major League Baseball.
Well, with the 2 week stretch of Mike Trout struggling, he still has like a quadruple WAR lead on every other center fielder in baseball. But Hicks ranks fourth in Major League Baseball with a Fangraphs WAR of 2.5. And third is Benintendi, who does not really play center field on a full-time basis. So I do rank Hicks third. Since June 1st, 110 plate appearances, a 1,056 OPS, 10 homers, which I think leads the Yankees since June 1st, ranks third in Major League Baseball in that time with slugging of 684. He is turning into what Brian Cashman sold us. More glimpses of Aaron Hicks this time. It's a little bit more sustained, which is good. And he's hitting from the right side over 1,000 OPS this season against lefties.
Well, I'm a little confused because I talked about this with Chad Jennings when he was on the show last week. Brian Cashman was selling us Jackie Bradley Jr.
and that's now, not a good thing anymore.
I know. And now Aaron Hicks, maybe Jackie Bradley Jr. is becoming like Aaron Hicks. It's like, you know, where are we with this one?
But, it's a paradox. It just goes round and round. Whoever's the good one at the time, the other one is going to turn into them one day. And this will go on until they're 40 years old, not a baseball.
Well, yeah, but after that, a baseball is going to dominate him on the links. Thank you, A-Rod, again for that.
Wait, hold on. Aaron
great,
Hicks
great
golfs?
Golfer. Scratch golfer.
No.
Scratch golfer.
Better than John Smoltz, who I think shot like a plus 90 in the senior tour.
Did he? I know he made the senior tour.
You know, he qualified for the U.S. Senior Open. Yeah, yes. I think he shot like a plus 14 on his first day.
Oh, good for him. Yes, Aaron Hicks would win. Great golfer. Thank you, A-Rod. Unbelievable information coming from A-Rod. Same information every time. Okay, so Aaron Hicks has been phenomenal. Like, really, really good. We started talking about him on the last episode a little bit, but I mean, you look at what he's done in different spots. He's hitting the leadoff spot. He's hitting the four spot. He's hit down in the order. He was in the three spot. So he's been all over the place, and he's showing that he can be productive. So the biggest, I think, the biggest question mark for me in the offseason was, who is Aaron Hicks? We need to see enough of him a long enough time so that we can kind of really get a better idea of who he really is as a player, just because the stretches that we've seen have not been long enough without injury, you know, disrupting them to see who he really is. And, you know, maybe we're seeing that. Maybe we're seeing the guy who can tee off on lefties and is making, you know, phenomenal contact and has some pop. I mean, this is a good center fielder.
Are you sold on Hicks? Is this the real Aaron Hicks?
I think this is a little high for the real Aaron Hicks, but I think he's better than most give him credit for sure. I think he's, you know, I don't remember when I said this, but we had talked about, you know, like, who is he? And I still think he's like a 260, 270 hitter with that can hit 20 to 25 home runs and is going to play a ridiculous center field. And I would sign up for that all day long for my starting center fielder with the makeup of this team.
The problem is that we just haven't seen consistency out of Aaron Hicks. And if he's going to have these months where he's the best center fielder in baseball, but then go out and look like he's absolutely lost at the plate for 6 weeks, it's a problem, and it's very frustrating to watch.
Well, I think one of the big reasons why we're seeing that, too, or why we've seen that in the past, is because of the injury reasons. I mean,
that's another thing.
His oblique was a problem, and it has been a problem.
At any time, he could go land back on the DL.
But he's proving right now, knocking on wood, that he has, he's been for a good stretch healthy, and, you know, maybe all that stuff is behind him. So we'll see. We're just going to keep going, and hopefully he can continue to stay on the field, and we can see what he really is. Because, you know, if he's anything like he was in June, we got ourselves one hell of a center fielder, and Brian Cashman stole another player for a guy who actually John Ryan Murphy's playing
John
very well
Ryan
this
Murphy's
year.
Having a decent season. Yeah. With
Where's
the
he in San Diego now?
Diamondbacks.
Yeah, he's out in the West, but
he's in the Korean Baseball League.
Minnesota totally screwed that up. So no
Are
patience.
You surprised?
No patience out there.
We briefly mentioned Gleyber back on the DL, or not back, Gleyber on the DL with hip strain. They tried to give him a half day off, I guess, on Tuesday to rest it up. I read something on Twitter that this is something Gleyber's been dealing with for years, and that it kind of flares up on him, and he might just need a day or two to rest it. I guess they didn't want to, I guess it was bad enough to place him on the DL, and Boone said after the game that Neil Walker is going to get decent time at second base.
So here's one thing I don't understand, and I will criticize Boone on this one. I don't really understand, if you're going to give the guy a day off, why are we going in and giving him just a half day, and then he's got to all of a sudden get up and stretch and make sure he's ready? And in theory, you're not giving the guy his normal routine to get ready for a game, so chances are he's probably not going to, he very well might not be completely stretched out like he normally would if he was
starting a game. Higher risk of injury.
Higher risk of
injury. Than just starting a game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's been sitting the entire game, and then all of a sudden he's got to go into the tunnel and, into the clubhouse and get ready to come into the game as a defensive replacement. So I don't like that move. If you're going to give him a day off because of that, because of the hip strain that was flaring up, why would you not just leave him on the bench and give him that full day off? Like, literally the point of not starting him is to get rest. You know, playing or resting for five innings and the whole day, that's not a day off at all. That's now throwing him into to a position where he's not used to. So, you know, it could have contributed. And then the very next day, you were seeing him at the plate after an at-bat. You know, it was re-aggravated. So who's to say that didn't, contribute?
Is that a situation where Ronnie Toto would have gone in for defense instead of Gleyber in that spot?
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Do you like the fact that Neil Walker might be getting the bulk of the time at second base, or would you rather see Brendan Drury?
Well, I still think people are pining now, like, oh, thankful Neil Walker's still on the team. You see, that's why he needs to be here. Like, no, he still doesn't need to be here.
That's actually a dumb take.
It makes no sense, because honestly, you could swap him out for Torres right now and it wouldn't make a damn difference. There's really just not that much of a difference. Because Drury could play first base, It's a moot point that Neil Walker could play first base now. It just doesn't affect it as much. Yes, it gives you a little bit more flexibility, but that's a third guy who could play first.
And the last straw was that he's a switch hitter, but guess what? He's not hitting.
Yeah, who cares? I don't care if he could throw with both hands too. It doesn't matter. He's not doing it well. So it makes him – this is it. This is it, right? He's getting some decent time at second base now with the injury to Gleyber. And if he can't hit while he's going out there every day, then I don't understand the point. Even if he does hit, what's the point?
So we had somebody tweet us that it was July 11th was the official last day of Chris Carter as a New York Yankee. So Neil Walker is going to survive Chris Carter.
Yeah, maybe. That's he will outlast him, it seems like.
Yep.
But I thought we had said that Chris Carter, that was when they released it, but the last day he played was on the 4th.
It was the last day he played was on July 4th, but he was still a member of the organization for a couple days after that.
Right. So he's going to, because of the injury, now we're going to see an extended period of time. But, you know, if he can hit, then he's going to delay the inevitable that much longer now. I don't know. Torres, to me, in that position, has proved that he's a better utility guy than Neil Walker. And I believe that, as both offensively, and they can play the same positions that are needed defensively. First base being the other position that Drury could play.
And then Wednesday's game, Sabathia goes out there and gives him stability again. 6 innings, 2 runs. That's what Sabathia is, Mr. Stability.
Is that 13-0 now following a...
They didn't lose.
Oh, it was the game before that. Yeah, so 12-0 still. But yeah, he does. He goes in there and pitches well. Six innings, 2 earned runs, and those were he escaped a first inning jam, which could have definitely changed the narrative, I think, on this game by striking out Acuña with the bases loaded. So that's a big jam for him to get out of and then continue on. I mean, the 2 runs. One was a solo shot, and then a ground ball sack ground ball to score a run. So he did very well, and that's exactly what he's been this year. He's been that guy who goes out there and gives these guys a consistent outing. Love it.
So Higashikoa, his third hit today, that makes 3 home runs for him. All he does is hit home runs. At what point does it get noticed around baseball that this guy went 0 for 20 something and then still is not a good hitter because he's going 1 for 3, 1 for 4, but he hits these bombs? At what point, how many home runs does he have to get to where his only hits are home runs before it starts becoming a thing?
What do you mean it starts becoming a thing?
Like on SportsCenter or talked about not just amongst Yankees Twitter, which we'll talk about everything the Yankees do. Right. When is it noticed outside of our little bubble?
Oh, I think it'd have to go beyond 5.
Beyond 5? Yeah,
I don't think it's going to get there.
I
didn't think it was going to get to 3, but I certainly don't think it's going to even get to 4 or 5.
On Monday morning, I threw on Boston Radio because I always love to hear Boston Radio after something bad happens to a Boston athlete, especially David Price. They were absolutely killing Price, but they were making fun of Higgy that even the Make-A-Wish candidate, Higashikoa, who had no hits coming in, can get a home run off David Price. Hey, kid, you want to get out there and feel like a big leaguer? Here's a meatball from David Price. I thought it was extremely hilarious.
Yeah, that's. I mean, he was giving a lot of meatballs up, I guess. Then, so it's he's a lot of charity cases for David Price when he plays only the Yankees.
Yep.
It's very very convenient that he's.
And
just
he was using the excuse that he was tipping pitches, and then we have Braves beat reporters after this series saying that Yankee Stadium is a joke. They're just giving up joke home runs, the short porch and right field.
It's the only reason the Braves were in a game is because of the right porch, the porch and right field. It's the only reason any of that were even remotely close. I mean, you know, Markakis's home run doesn't go out any other place. Acuña's home run doesn't go out. Like, they're not in these games. They're not winning these games unless the short porch is there. So,
didn't you know that when the Yankees are batting, the fence comes in 25 feet? Didn't you know this, guy?
It's utterly ridiculous. So I was at a barbecue today, and there's a couple guys that are Braves fans too, and they tried to come at me with this, and I destroyed them. I destroyed their lives, and I'm like, don't start this with me right now. You're gonna lose. So it was this is the second time in one day that I've had to defend Yankee Stadium from the Braves.
It's not about defending Yankee Stadium. It's just the fact that both teams are hitting in the same park. So
it's the fact that people are dumb and don't realize that both teams play there.
Right.
But you know what? That's great. Like, I really don't care what they say. The fact is the Yankees have a home field advantage, and every single park has some kind of little wrinkle that the team knows how to do and exploit better than the other team when they're visiting. And I kind of think that's how it should be. There are certain ways. I mean, how do you think Altuve has home runs? He just hits the ball up in the air to left field. It doesn't matter. It goes out because he just gets the ball up and it goes out. So there's a reason why they're more dangerous at home as well, because they have, you know, tailored certain at-bats and they know how to do things so that they can exploit that left field, that short left field. Same with Boston. So, you know, it's just one of those things that people will just complain, because if they lose, they complain. If they win, they act like it wasn't part of it.
Having said all that, Stanton's home run on Tuesday in the 8th inning was a joke.
Fine. The one that he hit today was a freaking missile.
It was not a joke.
It was a missile. You know, it just didn't. It wasn't high, but he hit it. He smacked it.
But the thing is, with Stanton, the only, you know, you could say it's a joke that ball went out on Tuesday night, but only Stanton and Aaron Judge get that ball out. Everybody else, it's a fly ball to the warning track.
Well, let's talk about this. So let's go take this a little bit further, because today also, I think Judge also had a home run that was a very much a Yankee Stadium home run, but not many guys can do what he did today because he when he hit that home run, what was it, the eighth inning or seventh inning? He hit that home run, and I mean that's an out, that's a foul ball probably. That's a ball that most guys won't even make contact with. But now the judge has so much time in the strike zone and that plane is so flat and he's making so much contact, and this is to his credit for changing his swing, he knows that all he has to do is touch bat to ball and good things will happen. He mishit that ball so badly and it still went out of the ballpark. And that's the beauty of Aaron Judge. And you know what that is? That is an adjustment by a major league player knowing where he plays a lot of his games. And he says, if I can make contact on this ball out and away, just contact, it's going to do damage. And that's exactly what happened today. So you know what? People can talk about Yankee Stadium being a short right porch and that being a joke, whatever. You know what these guys are doing? They're making adjustments to take advantage of it. And I think it's a great thing.
I'm just picturing like in Happy Gilmore when his golf coach is saying, just tap it. Give it the old taparoo. Just tap it in. Hey, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, just make contact because you're big enough and you're strong enough that the ball is going to leave the ballpark anyway.
I mean, it's true. And I think Stanton's starting to... you know, make his adjustments. Obviously, he's been on fire lately. I mean, he's been hitting the ball very well, and he's been hitting a lot more line drives. We're starting to see these balls that are just scorched. I mean, the one today, Markakis didn't even move. I mean, not even a step. He just, you know, he realized that thing was out as soon as it made contact. Probably because it was loud, and two, because the ball came at him so damn fast. But what you're seeing now is, I think, you know, he's using all fields, and he's doing it a lot better. He's making more contact. And he's realizing, when I make contact in Yankee Stadium, maybe this is part of these conversations that he and Judge are having. All you got to do is make contact. When you're big and strong like we are, it's going to go out. So, you know, I love seeing it. I love seeing both of those guys use right field because a lot of power guys do not use the opposite side.
Very true. We'll end on that note. Like I said, coming up is the audio and the recap of the Sabathia charity softball game. It was a lot of fun, so stay tuned for that. Scott, any last words?
Just a happy 4th to everybody. Hope you're hope you had a good time. Hope everybody was safe. And yeah, happy birthday to the boss. 88 years old would have been today on July 4th.
And hopefully you're not listening to this in the office on Thursday and you have the day off. I'm as free as Andy Dufresne was standing in the rain after escaping Shawshank coming out the drain. And these days you ain't holding me back. I'm flowing these raps. The pain it ain't a thing when the music in my brain I maintain. Last week Dom and I attended the Pitch In Foundation. It's CeCe Sabathia's foundation. He had a celebrity softball game at Yankee Stadium on Thursday. They raised $1 million, which is awesome. The foundation showcases three signature programs to help provide young people with the tools to be successful in school and on the field: All-Star Baseball Clinic, Youth Backpack Program, and Field Renovations. Dom, what's going on?
What's up? How we doing?
That was a lot of fun that we had last Thursday at Yankee Stadium. It was a nice little treat that you got because Scott couldn't make it.
Yeah, I was more than happy to fill in. It was a hell of an event for a hell of a good cause, and we got to meet and talk to bunch of cool people there for sure.
I was, as we were leaving the stadium, I was saying to you, because you're actually up at Syracuse, you started your master's program this week, but you've done things just like that a lot of people in that program I'm sure haven't had the chance to do.
Yeah, I guess I kind of have the edge in that regard. Not a bad thing.
What was it's always interesting, like when, because we did something with Steiner Sports a couple years ago for the 96 Yankees. So Pettit was there, Tino, Doc Gooden, Cecil Fielder. And I remember being in that room. That was like the first time I had been up close and personal with a lot of those guys I looked up to as a kid, followed as a kid. And it's kind of surreal. I still felt that as I was there standing next to CeCe Sabathia and Jorge Posada and some of these guys. What about you?
Yeah, that was my first time like ever interviewing somebody like that in a formal setting. So I was a little starstruck at first. Actually, before we did any Yankee player interviews, I'm a huge Giants fan, and Tiki Barber was talking to the guy next to us, and I see him there and I'm like, oh my God, that's Tiki Barber. Like, he's my childhood hero, running back for the New York Giants, like stud. Why did you retire so early? I wanted to ask him a question, and you were like, go ask him a question. And I was just like, I have nothing prepared, dude. I can't do this right now. Holy shit.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was definitely going to give you crap for that.
Yeah, I had to get out in front of that one.
That was, I understand you weren't prepared to interview Tiki Barber. You're prepared to interview Sabathia, Didi, and some other guys, some baseball guys, but not a football guy. I still think you should have taken the opportunity, even if you just pulled the Chris Farley and just said, Tiki, you are awesome. It would have been worth it.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
So now that you have had a week to think about it, what kind of question would you have asked him?
You know, I would just ask him probably actually a concussion related question about football, because he was one of the guys that actually retired really, really early. I think he was, I don't even know if he was 30. I think he was 30 or 31 maybe when he retired, but he's a younger guy. So I would ask him, you know, about where the game is trending in that regard. I think the average age for NFL running back, average career length, I should say, for the average NFL running back is only like 4 years. So I would probably ask him a question about that. And then I also would probably ask him a question about Saquon Barkley, who we also saw there at the event. He is a truck. So as a Giants fan, that's probably the question I would have asked.
That's a pretty good question. Was Tiki on that 07 team, the Giants team? I forget.
He wasn't. He had retired, I think, a year or two prior to that.
That sucks. I've always thought about that. And like, I think about Don Mattingly, and Mattingly retired for other reasons. He had a lot of back injuries. But to be the team's go-to guy, like Mattingly was for the Yankees and Tiki was for the Giants, and then to have them win a championship right after you leave, that's got to just eat at you.
Yeah, and it's Jeremy Shockey got a ring. Like, think about that. Just like, dude, just give your ring to Tiki, man.
Yeah. But we got there. First of all, you were just soaking wet because it was torrential rain for about an hour right before the event. So we show up. I was waiting for Dom to show up to the stadium. I was standing under one of those canopies that's outside of Yankee Stadium, but I was like not moving because the rain was coming sideways. So I was huddled in a corner just doing a mic test on our equipment. We get there. You are like I said, just dripping with the rain. We walk in and then we just thrown into the red carpet like sheep. They just stuff us in there. There's like 50 people in this area for like maybe 10 people.
Yeah, I pulled up my khakis where I had like tan khakis on, and it was just so clear that they were just soaked. And I didn't have an umbrella in my car. I parked down the street from like the dugout and like that gate 2 entrance, I want to say, by the parking garage. So I had a long walk with no umbrella. So I brought out a Men's Warehouse like suit cover, and it was just raining sideways. So I just wound up still getting absolutely soaked everywhere, but we made do with it. And, yeah, like you said, they kind of put us in there like sheep and we just had to go with it, but it was an awesome experience.
There were guys selling ponchos out around the stadium. You should nab one of them on the way in.
It was too late. It was too late at that point.
they were delayed on the red carpet, so guys didn't come in at first. One of the first guys to come in was actually Mariano Rivera, and he pulled the same thing at the Steiner Sports event where he would take pictures but then not talk to anybody. So I was a little disappointed that Mo didn't come down and talk to people. I would have just loved the chance to talk to Mariano, but we didn't get that. We did end up having a chance to talk to Sabathia, Didi, Sonny Gray, which was definitely interesting. I think people are looking forward to hearing that. David Robertson, Carlos Beltran, and Jorge Posada. The Jorge Posada audio is not on here because it was our first one, and of course I messed up the actual recording of the audio, but it was a trial run. You can go check out Bronx Pinstripes Twitter. There is a video of the Jorge Posada questions, so at least we didn't completely lose it.
Yeah, that Jorge Posada audio, you went to go shake his hand, and I watched you just kind of like fumble your phone a little bit, and I think you just X'd out of the recording.
Yeah.
And then you looked at your phone, and you were like, God damn it.
Next time we need a better method for I need some sort of holster for the phone. So
yeah, definitely some sort of holster would be beneficial, I think.
Yeah. What guy were you most excited that you got a chance to talk to?
I mean, it had to be CeCe. Because
he's the man of the hour.
He's the man of the hour. And you know, since he came to New York, it's almost 9 years ago, which is crazy to think about, but not only has he established himself as a veteran in the clubhouse, you know, evolved into this power pitcher to a finesse pitcher, made that transition seamlessly. And then he's obviously very active in the community with his wife. So it was really cool to talk to him. I forget what kind of question you asked him, but I kind of talked to him about some lighterhearted stuff. So he was cool with everything, and that was definitely big for me.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Same, yeah. Most of the questions that we asked these guys were lighthearted because that's the environment that it's in. It's a celebrity softball game. We don't need to be drilling them with hard-hitting questions, although I would have felt disingenuous if I didn't ask Sonny Gray at least a semi-hard question, because we have absolutely eviscerated Sonny Gray on the podcast for 2 straight months. So I think I would have gotten some shit on social media if I didn't give him at least a tough question.
Yeah, no, you had to. You had really no choice there. No choice at all.
And one thing I remember thinking after we talked to Didi is he's a big dude. He might not look big on the field because he's usually batting in between Stanton and Judge, so he looks like a baby out there. But standing next to Didi, he's taller than I am. I'm 6'1", and he's taller than me, and he's broad-shouldered. Like, that dude's big. It just kind of reminds you, like, oh, yeah, these guys are professional athletes. They're not normal humans.
Yeah, he's a house. But I agree with you when you say, like, proportionally, you always see him kind of near or around Stanton or Judge, and it's just like they make anybody look like a midget, I guess, or small. Yeah. But Didi is a big dude for sure.
And then, of course, on the flip side, you have Sonny Gray, who is actually tiny.
Yeah, he's like my height. I'm like 5'8" and a half on a good day. And he's like, I think maybe 5'10"-ish. So he's in the same ballpark as me.
Right. We also talked to Pete Rosenberg of the Michael K. Show. That was a fun little snippet we got too. Did not get a chance to talk to Johnny Damon. He was kind of preoccupied with some other people and his wife, who was there, who was also getting a lot of attention. So did not talk to Damon. Judge and Stanton were on the field. A-Rod was on the field too. They didn't do the red carpet though. I would have thought it was hilarious if A-Rod rolled through the red carpet with J-Lo.
Yeah, I think they're too A-list. Like, they just showed up the whole red carpet. They were like, nah. And we were all like, where's A-Rod? And then actually we were sitting in the press box and I think they announced his name for him to like go out on the line and then he didn't come out. And then I think 5 minutes later, they were like, oh, A-Rod's here with J-Lo. And then they put the camera on them in the dugout. And we were like, oh.
And, yeah, well, J-Lo is A-list. And then that makes A-Rod A-list by association, I guess.
Yes, I agree.
Because A-Rod on his own is probably not A-list.
He's not. I don't think so. A-Rod Corp doesn't make the A-list.
And then one of the funnier things during the game, you pointed this out. You got a little video on Snapchat for this. Is everyone got, like, a casual applause when they were introduced, except Jen Selter. Who there was just crickets. It was so good.
I was just taking a Snapchat of like just the whole thing, just a video, and Jen Selter happened to be walking up, and the PA guy was like, "And now batting, Jen Selter. How about a hand, everybody?" And then it just dead.
you either didn't know who she was, or you knew who she was, and you're like, "I am not cheering for her." So. Very funny. It was fun being up in the press box. Sabathia's team won 4-1, if you care about that information. It was a loosely regulated softball game. I think there was an argument after 3 pitches at home plate about balls and strikes, so classic pace of play issues. But go check out some of the other tweets that we were putting out from Bronx Pinstripes and the Instagram pictures and Instagram stories. Obviously, can't go back and check that out, but a lot of the stuff is still on Twitter. Videos and images from that. It was a lot of fun. And we're going to get into all the audio clips coming up in a minute. Dom, any other thoughts on the event?
That's it. It was a great time for a great cause, like I said before. And enjoy the interviews.
Awesome. And we're looking forward to doing the next one of these types of things. Enjoy the interviews, guys. It ain't hard to tell. CC, how you doing? Good. Congratulations on this awesome event. You got a lot of athletes in the building tonight. Who's the one guy you'd pick to make a transition to the baseball field?
Oh, wow. I keep saying that, but T-Mac played. You know, he played, he pitched. And,
that's cheating.
Yeah, yeah, right? Oh, he threw gas. He could throw. So we'll have to wait to see how his swing goes. I think Action Bronson. I'm looking at my man right now. I know he's a big baseball fan. He loves to hit stuff. So we'll have to wait and see how that turned out.
So I know all the players got custom Jordan cleats. I've always been wondering, what's your favorite Jordan model? Is it those 9s or what is it for you?
Mine are the 11s. That's why I chose to give everybody 11s. I like the Concords, just, you know, straight classic 11s.
All right, CeCe, thank you. Good luck against the Sox tomorrow night. Strike out everybody you face.
Thanks.
Thanks, man.
This podcast here with David Robertson. It seems like when you got traded back to the Yankees, it was just a really happy moment for you. Can you speak about the last year of your life?
It was definitely a lot of fun coming back here. Being traded is tough. I just had a baby 14 days before I got traded, so went a long time without seeing my family. But coming back over here was good, because at least coming back into this environment, I knew everyone here. I knew a lot of the staff, I knew a lot of the players, and I knew what role I'd be put in. And you couldn't ask for a better situation for me to come into to a team that was willing to go for it.
I'm assuming you're aware of your nickname Houdini, right?
Yeah, I've heard it a few times. I managed to get myself in enough trouble to get a terrible
nickname. I was going to say, at what point in your career did you start to realize, like, I'm always in jams, but I'm seeming to get out of them a lot?
Yeah, I feel like that started in college, high school maybe too. I don't know. I feel like there's always runners all over the bases whenever I'm pitching.
What do you think it makes about your game versus other pitchers that struggle in those situations? What do you try and do in those moments?
I try to win. I don't like to lose. I just try to get the next guy out. Try to keep the run from scoring. Make guys put balls in play when I have to, and go for the strikeouts when I can.
Hey, Didi, get a second? So we're a fan website, and we give a T-shirt away every time you hit a home run. So you're kind of putting us out of business this year. I was wondering, can I get some contact info to get maybe some retribution for that?
I mean, you can contact anybody you want.
The shirt is actually Sir Clutch. That's what we've nicknamed you. How do you prepare yourself for the moments like in October last year against Corey Kluber?
How do I prepare myself? I mean, just watching videos and see what he's trying to do to you, and see if you can find a pattern or something like that. I think that's what everybody does every day. But, you know, you're not going to be successful every day when you play the game. So you got to go out there and get, like, big hits or something. But whenever it happens, you know, take times and then just let the game finish. And then you can celebrate.
So we know Judge is the clubhouse DJ. I was wondering if you approve of his DJing skills and what some of your music tastes are. You know, we got new Drake coming out tomorrow. I don't know if you're hyped up about that.
Not yet. Probably got to wait to listen to see how good it's going to be. But, Judge plays from new school to old school, mid school. He plays everything. So everybody's happy in the clubhouse.
Hey, Sonny, can we get a question? All right, Andrew with Bronx Pinstripes for a Yankees podcast. So you've been in New York now for about a year. What would you say your favorite thing is about playing for the Yankees?
Showing up to the park every day and expecting to win. Like I said, sometimes we talk about when we lose, like, that feels weird, but it's true. Every day we show up, we expect to win, and it makes you want to come to the ballpark every day.
Yeah, I mean, you guys haven't lost much this year. You've had some ups and downs on the mounds. How have you been dealing with that in your first full season with the Yanks?
I mean, I feel like I'm dealing with it fine. It's not, things don't get better unless you go out and work on it and continue to put the effort in and try to get it better. I don't think I'm going to change who I am if I go through a little bit of a struggle. But I'll just keep putting in the work and keep trying to turn this thing around.
How's your underhand motion? You're going to get out there on the mound today in the softball game? Maybe strike CC out?
I wish. I don't think they're going to let us.
I don't think they're going to let us,
especially with it being a little wet. I don't think we're getting much action in this game.
All right, appreciate it, Sonny. Thanks.
Man, thank you.
What's up, Carlos?
How are you, man? From
Boston Stripes. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you.
So what's life like after retirement for you?
It's great. I'm home, spending time with the family, being around the kids every single day, planning some trips with the family, and enjoying. I'm going to enjoy the summer for the first time in 23 years. So I don't know how the summer feels in Puerto Rico, so I'm looking forward to being in Puerto Rico with my family and also being able to, you know, to be involved with the situation that happened in the island.
Absolutely. Have you picked up a baseball bat since retirement? Or has it just been golf clubs?
I haven't, man, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not playing today. I haven't picked up a bat, I haven't picked up a ball or a glove, so I'm just going to come here, support CeCe, and being around the guys.
some talk about potential managerial career for you. Do you see that in the near future, or are you staying away from the game?
Well, right now, I'm enjoying the family. Like I said, I want to be away from the game for a little bit and get the opportunity to miss the game. There's no doubt that you can count anything out. Maybe 1 or 2 years from now, I don't know. I don't know what might happen to Carlos Beltran, but there's no doubt that I love the game. There's no doubt that I love to be around the guys, and I love to share information with them.
Pete, you got a second?
Hi, Andrew Otani with Bronx Pinstripes for a Yankees podcast.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
I'm going to talk shit about Michael Kay. I'll do it right now.
That was my first question, actually. All right, we're here with Pete Rosenberg of the Michael Kay Show, and you just said you're going to talk shit about Michael Kay, so pick that up.
No, honestly, I have nothing bad to say about the Kayster. I always wish I did, because he loves to talk trash about me on the show, but the fact is, he's the best. And I've really grown to enjoy him as a broadcaster now that I've been watching the Yankees a lot more. I really enjoy him in both. I hate to say that, but he's pretty fantastic.
So you're dressed like I used to dress when I went to the dining hall in college. I appreciate that. Best on the red carpet here. Is this what you're going to be playing the game in?
No, I have a jersey. I was wearing the whole thing already on Yes earlier for the show. And then they're like, you have to go on the red carpet. You shouldn't wear the jersey. So I am dressed straight up. Yeah, this is definitely dining hall style.
Cool gray 11 cleats. Are you going to sport them?
Shout out to CeCe Sabathia. We all got the cool gray 11 Jordan cleats.
So damn.
Yeah.
CeCe's the man.
Yeah, CeCe's the man, dude. Ever since I got here, he's been like, it's really been the only Yankee I've had like a long-running relationship with, and he's just the best dude. And I love Ryan Rucco and their podcast, so CeCe's the man.
Yeah, I mean, he came over in 09, and he was brought over to be the ace, but he's kind of turned into, like, the dad of the clubhouse is what I say on the podcast, and I feel like he has forever made himself a Yankees legend with what he's done the last 10 years.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. He has become sort of Papa Bear of this team, and then with 09, if they can get a ring this year, he really etches himself into special space. I mean, especially given the last 2 years, you started to think after everything that happened a few years ago, we were getting towards the end. And this run that he's had at the end, I think, has really upped his status as an all-time Yankee.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.